It's Friday, September 17th. There's consensus that boosters are safe, but not that they're necessary. We start here. Doctors prepare to debate how many of us need a boost.
Vaccine efficacy is slowly tapering off.
The outcomes of some hearings are preordained, not this one. We'll walk you through what's at stake. An American ally goes nuclear.
I think the U.S. will sort of roll their eyeballs and said, look, you lost fair and square.
Controversial submarine deal has us trying to allay French fears. And kids don't miss the bus. Also, bus don't miss the kids.
I'm going to say in the last 3 years, we probably lost 20 drivers.
A nationwide driver shortage could leave families literally out in the cold. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. I have a buddy who just had a second child with his wife earlier this year. And like many parents right now, he's thinking the one thing I don't want to happen is I don't want my kids to get COVID. He's vaccinated, but of course his young children are not. Neither are 12 years old. So he's tried to protect them every way he knows how. He's tried to look out for places where large groups of unvaccinated people might potentially spread the virus. He's tried to keep social distance. Well, this week, he told me, he tested positive for COVID. Nothing major, like a nasty flu so far. But now he's living in another wing of his house, staring at his kids through a glass door frame while his wife struggles to take all the parenting duties on herself. For many Americans, that is what a breakthrough infection looks like. And it's why booster shots and extra vaccine dose seem like the logical next step. But so far, boosters are only approved for Americans with compromised immune systems. That could change in the days to come, depending on what happens in a big meeting today at the Food and Drug Administration. Sony Salzman is with ABC's medical unit. And Sony, can we just back up for a second and remind ourselves, why are boosters such a thing? Why are they such a thing right now? And why is this such a fraught moment for them?
So Brad, what we're seeing from a mix of clinical trials, these well-designed trials, but also just real-world data, people out there in the world, is that vaccine efficacy is slowly tapering off.
Meanwhile, new CDC data shows COVID cases are rising in fully vaccinated Americans. We call those breakthrough cases.
That is why you're seeing more breakthrough infections now.
Doctors are telling me that breakthrough cases aren't unexpected because, like with any vaccine, it's not 100% effective at preventing a person from getting sick.
But what scientists are worried is that one day, vaccine efficacy is going to drop even lower.
And even though our vaccines are currently working well to prevent hospitalizations, we are seeing concerning evidence of waning vaccine effectiveness over time and against the Delta variant.
So what we're seeing is a very time-dependent slope where the longer ago you were vaccinated, the less effective your vaccine is.
Right, which leads us to today, right? So the FDA having this big hearing, what is the purpose of it? Like, what is the question that these folks are going to be here to answer?
So today there's going to be an FDA hearing. It's actually the FDA's independent advisory committee.
And what we're looking at is this vaccine not doing what it's supposed to do?
This is an independent group, and they basically give advice to the FDA about what the FDA potentially should do.
So if the companies or the FDA can make a case that there has been an erosion in protection against severe critical disease, and that erosion in protection against severe disease would be mediated or eliminated by a third dose, then we could move forward. But to date, we really need to see those data to be able to make that decision.
And then the FDA can either take or not take that advice. Now, the question that's being put in front of that advisory committee today is whether or not we should approve a booster shot for the Pfizer vaccine. It's just Pfizer. We're not talking about Moderna and Johnson & Johnson. And today, all day, these scientists are going to be debating whether or not it's appropriate to boost Pfizer.
Well, and a booster shot would be like a third dose, essentially, for the Pfizer vaccine, because you get your first two. That's when you're considered fully vaccinated. But what is the timeline that Pfizer is pitching? How and when and who would get this?
Pfizer is strongly making the case today that everyone 16 and older should get a booster shot 6 months after your primary vaccination. So 6 months after that second dose.
Big picture. Boosting is important. Boosting is necessary.
That is the case that they're making based on their own studies that they've conducted on booster shots.
Pfizer's data from both the U.S. and Israel.
And the real world data we're seeing from Israel.
Shows that it's COVID-19 vaccine and it begins to wane, right? The protection begins to go down somewhere around 6 to 8 months. And the drug maker says that research suggests that a third shot given 6 months after the second dose can really restore your protection.
Which is kind of a perfect case study because Israel is a small country with very high vaccination rates and they exclusively use Pfizer.
Is there a downside to booster shots? Like, I'm trying to figure out why this might not be approved, because experts have been resoundingly clear that the shots themselves, both from Pfizer and Moderna and Johnson, and Moderna is getting checked out next week, they're safe. Like, if you inject them into somebody, the person's going to be fine. But are there reasons to say then, hold on, we don't need to give everyone a third shot? Like, why wouldn't you?
Well, you know, there are reasons. So, you know, practically speaking, it's not true that there's no side effects. You know, I'm sure a lot of people who got that second dose remember that the second dose kind of knocks you on your butt a little bit, right? I mean, it can really take you out of work for a day. So again, you don't want to give a shot that you don't really need. There's always a cost to everything, right? Now, it is true that the vaccines are generally very safe. So if you're willing to accept those side effects, what are the downsides? You know, it really comes down to this debate in the scientific community that's happening right now.
Dueling data. That's what's facing an FDA advisory committee ahead of Friday's meeting on boosters.
Some scientists say that we are seeing these vaccines wane in their effectiveness when it comes to preventing mild infections. And that should be the bar. These vaccines were designed to prevent mild infections, and so we should boost. Now is the time.
It's not the kind of thing that you want to miss by 6 months. You'd rather be a little too early than a little too late.
Other scientists are saying, no, hold up.
Do we really have the science and data to say what's safe for a third dose or not?
These vaccines are still working extraordinarily well to protect people from hospitalization. They are still keeping people out of the hospital. That should be the bar. It's too soon for a booster right now.
Wait, so then I'm wondering about next steps then, because in the past, when the FDA has had these hearings, it's almost been a foregone conclusion that they would get approved. Is that the case here? Like, should we plan on September 20th? Like, what is that, 3-4 days from now, that everyone's going to be allowed to get their booster somewhere?
You know, Brad, I really don't know what's going to happen. You're right. I mean, when we saw these vaccines come up for approval, it was pretty much guaranteed. The efficacy was so strong. Now, when it comes to the argument for boosters, as I said, there is a really robust scientific debate. The FDA advisors, they are going to debate this all day today. And I really don't know at the end of the day when they cast their vote, which way those votes are going to land. Then after that, no matter what they do or say, the FDA itself has to decide whether or not to approve this booster. If they approve, the CDC will weigh in and issue a recommendation. All of this is to say, it's not going to be a done deal by September 20th, but should the booster shot be authorized today or over the weekend, the CDC will weigh in next week with their recommendations, and you could see some sort of rollout by mid next week or later next week.
All right, really useful information here. Sony Salzman from our medical unit. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, France is this close to asking for the Statue of Liberty back, the diplomatic dust up, after the break.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
When you think of American military hostilities, you think of North Korea, Syria, maybe Russia or China. You do not think of France. But this week, what seemed like a pretty boring announcement to the average American became a full-fledged diplomatic battle that is shaking this nation's oldest military alliance. Colonel Stephen Gagnard is a former Marine, former State Department official, and current ABC News contributor. Colonel Gagnard, this was the U.S. earlier this week in this military agreement with the U.K. and Australia saying, we're going to sell Australia some nuclear submarines, right? Like, what's the big deal?
Actually, it's a really big deal, Brad, because we haven't shared that kind of nuclear propulsion technology. Remember, this is not nuclear weapons. This is nuclear propulsion technology since we did it with the Brits back in 1958. So we don't do this very often, and it's a signal to the world, not just Australia, that the perception of China and the attitude towards China is shifting globally.
Although Australia, the UK, and U.S. partnership, AUKUS, it sounds strange, there's all these acronyms, but it's a good one. AUKUS, our nations will update and enhance our shared ability to take on the threats of the 21st century, just as we did in the 20th century, together.
Before, the only submarine force that was on par with China really was the U.S. nuclear submarine force, and that's divided up around the world. And so now having the Australians have a nuclear powered submarine is going to begin to balance out the balance of power, military power, between Western nations and China in the South China Sea in particular.
It is not an uncommon thing for countries to take decisions in their own strategic interests and to build up their defense capabilities. China makes the same decisions.
Where does France come in then? Because the French reaction was pretty wild. At one point, analysts were using phrases like, we were stabbed in the back. Why was France so upset?
Yeah, I think the thing that's funny to most observers is that the French reaction has been far more outspoken and wounded in public than the Chinese.
Décision unilatérale, brutale.
French foreign minister deemed it a, quote, stab in the back, compared it to a unilateral decision like the ones made by former President Trump.
The whole idea here is that the Australian government needed to replace their conventional, meaning that it's powered by conventional hydrocarbons or batteries, submarine force. And they had a big competition, and the French were selected to build this submarine mostly in Australia.
China continues to claim most of the South China Sea, claims that have long been rejected by the international community.
Along the way, China has become more belligerent.
U.S. military aircraft.
The U.S. is going to fly in international airspace in the region, regardless of what the Chinese do there.
The Australians said, you know, what we really need is a long-range submarine that can stay underwater for a long time, can go very fast, and is very quiet. And that is a nuclear submarine, and there are only really two other of their allies that build that kind of submarine.
The French have a version which was not superior to that operated by the United States and the United Kingdom.
The shipyard called Naval that would build this, was building the Australian submarine, is majority owned by the French government. And so the French government just lost out on a $90 billion contract that the U.S. government and the U.K. government essentially took away from them.
We cooperate incredibly closely with France on many shared priorities in the Indo-Pacific, but also beyond, around the world. We're going to continue to do so.
France's shipbuilding industry was in dire straits. They were counting on this Australian submarine to sort of keep them afloat. And all of a sudden, the U.S. comes along, offers a much better submarine, much more suited to the kind of threat that Australia is facing. And now the French government and lots of French workers are out of a $90 billion contract. That's why they're so upset.
Is there any repairing this, or are we seriously back in like Jacques Chirac doesn't want to go to war with us and we're talking about freedom fries and stuff? Like, where does this go?
Yeah, I think most Americans are kind of like, what? And I think that what's going to eventually happen here is the tempest will blow over, and tempest in a teapot. And, you know, the French get kind of emotional about these things and they get kind of vocal. And I think the U.S. will sort of roll their eyeballs and said, look, you lost fair and square. And what we've done is better for you, France, in the long run, because it's going to make things tougher for Chinese to push the rest of the free world around in the Asia Pacific region.
Right, which means that in the years ahead, the story is not as much about the U.S. and France. It's much more about China and how so many countries in that region are reaching out to their allies on the other side of the world saying China is becoming more and more threatening in how they deal with us. We'll see what kind of alliances that creates. Colonel Stephen Ganyard, thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
If you've noticed kids standing outside by a curb lately, it's true, school is back in session. Kids are finally waiting for those school buses again. Except if you talk to parents of those kids, they might tell you those waits seem way longer this year.
In the morning, we don't have buses for coming to the school.
In fact, in some communities, parents have had to drop everything and drive their own kids to school because there was no bus driver to take them. And as in-person classes begin, what was initially written off as an issue for some local school boards has become a nationwide bus driver shortage that is throwing school districts into chaos.
We have vehicles. We put people in them who are qualified to drive them and do what we can to make sure kids can get to school.
In fact, just this week, the governor of Massachusetts called in the National Guard to begin training to take over some of these bus routes. So why is this happening? Let's ask a bus driver this morning. Donna Rose Nero is a public school bus driver in the great state of New Jersey. Where exactly do you work, Donna?
I drive a school bus for Evesham Township School District in Marlton, New Jersey.
Okay, Marlton, New Jersey. What is the job like? What's your day like?
Our district buses preschool children up to eighth grade. Generally, we start at 6:30. Some start a little earlier, some start a little later. But the average time is 6:30 start time, work until 9 in the morning. And my job is a nice job, except for COVID. You know, it's a little concerning right now. Some of the buses this year are driving around with 50 kids on them. And you're in close quarters. No air condition on those big buses. Windows down maybe, but you're packed with 50 kids. So it is concerning with COVID.
Well, and then I'm wondering that, you know, have you noticed a shortage of bus drivers in your community? Like, is that a thing?
Oh, it is a thing. It started, I'm going to say, maybe about 3 years ago. A lot of older drivers started retiring. Prior to that, a lot of them stayed, you know, even after their time was in, they stayed to drive because the conditions were nice. You know, conditions have changed in our work environment. You know, it's a tough job. You drive in the rain, you drive in the snow, you know, the sleet, it doesn't much matter. You're on ice and you have up to 50 kids on a bus that you're responsible for. So, you know, it's a little unnerving. So we lost, I'm going to say in the last 3 years, we probably lost 20 drivers, and we have not replaced many of them, maybe two or three.
Right.
So, yeah, we do have a shortage. And then that falls on the taxpayer because then they subcontract those runs to private companies.
They just don't have enough drivers. In fact, in parts of the country, some kids have already had to miss days of school because of this problem.
You know, problem with that is they're having the same issue, driver shortage. So we have gotten calls over the last 2 years to go pick up children that we're paying a premium price to these subcontractors who don't send the bus because they don't have a driver.
Wait, I'm sorry. So you're saying they've called you that same day, saying you got to go pick up some kids right now? Like they're waiting outside somewhere?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's kids waiting, so we'll get a call. Hey, can you go to the school and get these kids? Or, you know, I'm going to send you this run that has happened more than once over the last couple of years.
Wow, that sounds like a nightmare. And then this sounds like a nightmare for you. Sounds like a nightmare for the families.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it is a nightmare. Yes, it is. But that's how we roll, so to speak. You know, Massachusetts is calling in the National Guard to bust their kids. So it's crazy times right now.
Right. Well, and that's kind of why I'm wondering why the shortage. I mean, are the reasons something that you've spent time thinking about?
I think it has to do in general with the fact that the job, like I explained to you, are shifts, but yet the job ties you up for 10 or 11 hours a day.
Wow.
So if someone new comes in and they have a 5 hour a day run because they're new and they don't have the opportunity to take more hours, they're still tied up for those 10 or 11 hours a day. They're making what, $18,000, $20,000 a year? So you're not going to draw someone who's looking for a career as a school bus driver.
They want higher pay. They want to know when a child with COVID gets on their buses, and they want administrators to install plexiglass for their protection.
Listen, MARTA bus drivers have it. Greyhound bus drivers have it. Megabus has it. Why don't the schools have it?
We get a lot of older folks who have a pension, you know, and they just want to, I guess, fill in their time some. The job does not offer benefits for new hires. If you have less than 6 hours a day, you're not getting benefits. So that is a big negative.
Right. And you know what's interesting? This is the exact opposite of what we're hearing about in this COVID job market. We're hearing about younger job seekers who are searching for more flexibility, like more benefits. That's where they're gravitating towards.
Exactly. You know, it's just rough. And the district does not want to see it. So And I know it's not just our district. It's a lot of districts. It's, you know, across the board. It's countrywide at this point.
Jennifer Genovese was a school bus driver in Nassau County, Florida, but recently left her job.
And it almost is a perfect storm of everything that is going on. The pay, the COVID. I mean, you're an enclosed bus.
I think the whole mindset needs to change. Like, only the bus drivers. You're only a bus driver. But they don't realize what those bus drivers really do. I mean, you know, we've gotten kicked, spit at, punched. You know, it depends on what kind of children you drive.
There is a definite concern about the health ramifications of driving a bus during, you know, COVID.
And COVID is worse. It absolutely is. I mean, you're constantly telling these kids to pull those masks up, keep your nose covered, keep your mouth covered, pull that mask. It's constant. And, you know, it is a little unnerving. We're riding around in a tin can full of germs. and then we get told that our department has the highest sick rate. We use the most sick days. Can you imagine? I don't know why. It's crazy.
Well, it's in this job where you are the lifeline for so many families, particularly families who have worked hard to get their kid into the school on the other side of town. Or, you know, we've heard about how school bus systems do close the wealth gap. They close the race gap in a lot of communities. And yet no one in some of these places is there to drive the buses. Donna Rose Nero, she'll be driving today in Marlton, New Jersey. Thanks so much.
No problem, Brad. Thank you very much for making us known and what we do.
Okay, we're going to take another quick break. When we return, Hollywood loves special effects, but making people disappear isn't supposed to be one of them. One Last Thing is next. And One Last Thing.
I gave you 10 years to live your life.
One of the hottest films this year is Shang-Chi, Legend of the Ten Rings. It didn't just do well for a pandemic movie, it crushed the American record for biggest Labor Day weekend movie ever.
How did you find me?
I always know where my children are.
One of the reasons was it's a Marvel movie, which is owned by our parent company, Disney. They usually do well. Another is that studios usually put out their big movies earlier in the year. But a big part of this, people said, was the excitement that comes from different ethnic groups being represented on screen. Well, this week, Hispanic Heritage Month began, and a new report came out from USC's Annenberg Inclusion Initiative showing that Hispanics are still incredibly underrepresented on screen. This is a block.
It's what we always dreamed of, to work with a community of Latino actors telling our own stories.
There weren't a lot of people when I was growing up on television or in films that I could grasp onto and say, oh, wow, that's like me.
Which is even more bizarre considering, and I did not know this, Latinos are the nation's most consistent moviegoers. A study from the Motion Picture Association of America showed that Latinos are more likely than any other group to go to movies in theaters. They're Hollywood's best customers. And yet, according to this study, just 7% of films in 2019 featured a Latino lead. In fact, forget starring roles, only 6% of speaking roles went to Hispanic actors. 6% in a country where 20% of people are Latino.
What needs to be emphasized here is not just seeing Latinos in a film, but it really opens up the conversation about representation all across the board.
The study said issues continued off camera with directors. It was even more pronounced with women, suggesting that in a month meant to offer visibility, Hollywood needs to invest in some way bigger spotlights. Start Here is produced by Kelly Therese, Brenda Salinas-Baker, Lewis Millman, Madeline Wood, David Toledo, Josh Cohan, Ariel Chester, Tara Gimble, and Lauren Efron. Thanks to Liz Alessi, Lakia Brown, John Newman, Elizabeth Russo, and Stacia Deshishku. Special thanks this week to Jonah Haskell, Chris Berry, Lisette Rodriguez, Jim Hill, and Ariel Metropolis. I'm Brad Milkey. See you Monday.
When
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt cartridge.
What were you thinking in that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia, Wednesday night at 10, 9 Central on ABC.